You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Chris Doyle. Chris, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm kind of excited to talk to you, Brainerd.
I am too. Let's talk about what it is that you're working on now. What are you currently involved in? And if it's more than one thing, tell me everything.
Well, for a while now, I've been working primarily in animation, and a lot of that animation kind of has been about the city. And so one thing that I'm working on is that I've just actually shifted my base right now from New York to Mexico City for a little while, for the next 6 months. And so when you ask me what I'm working on, one of the things that I'm working on is kind of getting myself reoriented to a new place, which I think is actually kind of an exciting project into itself. I just finished a project that took me a good long time, maybe a year and a half, a longer animation called Swell, which I showed in September in San Francisco. And I'm continuing to kind of put that out in the world in various ways. So that's a sort of second project that's going on. While I'm in Mexico, I'm sort of starting a new animation piece, which is just in its very early stages.
Okay, so why don't we talk a little bit about Swell, and then I'd like to know more about exactly why the move to Mexico City and what you're working on there, because that is a big move. But let's talk a little bit about Swell.
Sure.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because you're saying that's part of what you're still working with, in the sense that it'll be traveling around, ideally, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, Swell is part of it's part of a larger series called Course of Empire, which refers back to the cycle of paintings by Thomas Cole, who's a Hudson River painter, that he made in the 19th century, called Course of Empire. And Swell is the final animation in a series of five that I made that are all loosely related to the five paintings in the series. This all sort of started on the heels of the crash in 2008, so I've been now working on it for 9 years, and it was great to finish Swell, because I really could kind of close that project after a very long time.
I'm glad we're talking at this point in the project too, because that must feel kind of great to close after all of that time. That's almost a 10-year project, 8 years, right?
You're very immersed in it. It has a kind of ramp into it, and then you get very, very immersed in it. And then it's been so wonderful to sort of feel like a clean slate. And that's part of the move also. But I'll talk about the broader project and then put Swell into a kind of context, I guess. It started in 2008 because I was commissioned by Mass MoCA to do a piece for a show curated by Denise Markanish called These Days, Elegies for Modern Times. And I made a piece called Apocalypse Management. And it was a kind of an animated piece that dealt with destruction, various forms of destruction, earthquake, tsunami. I had been collecting images over Flickr from various natural and man-made disaster war. I realized at that point in 2008 that what was starting to happen was that what we were thinking was that the apocalypse was upon us, but it was upon us kind of every day via news and internet cycles. And so it wasn't that our lives were not so much going to be, this sort of utopian life in the garden, as much as it was going to be a series of managing of a series of apocalypse. So I started making these animations with that piece. And then there were three other pieces.
And by making animations, just to be clear, what everyone sees, how are those animations made and displayed?
This was while before that I had made a lot of stop motion pieces and pieces based in video, this series was also a way for me to integrate my own drawing into animation. And so this was a group of work where I made digital animation on a tablet by drawing by hand. And so they tend to be, while they use the computer and the Wacom tablet as a digital tool, they're still made in a kind of old school way, frame by frame drawing. And so all five in that series are made by drawing on the computer. And so it starts with apocalypse management, and then it moves to waste generation and Bright Canyon, and then the fluid, and Swell is the final piece. So Swell is sort of related to the central panel in the five pieces by Thomas Cole, and that's the consummation of empire piece. And so Swell deals with the city that's kind of grown exponentially, and it deals a lot with labor and construction and the idea of what it takes to build up the city, and the sort of unseen participation. And it also there's a sort of meta layer going on too, where while it's an animation about the city constructing itself and the people who build it, it also has the artist's hand as part, the animator's hand as part of the project. And so what ends up happening is that I kind of thought a lot about, you know, the complicity of the role of the artist in the whole gentrification process and in the sort of forwarding of the culture of empire also. So,
And you're mentioning empire, and at the time you did this was 2008. So although you haven't said this directly, apocalypse is perhaps also referring to the economic crash, right?
That's all consuming.
You know, we're going about our lives every day, but still galleries are closing like crazy. All kinds of things were happening in the years following 2008.
Yeah, there was a kind of confluence in 2008 where apocalypse kind of referred not only to the financial crisis, but to a kind of social upheaval and also sort of an environmental apocalypse. And so I think dealing with the confluence of all of this is extremely anxiety-producing. It was then, and it, weirdly, you know, 9 years later, I think when I started the project, I was pretty naive in thinking that the cycle of apocalypse might have calmed down by now. And ironically, I think it's only escalated. You know, it's possible, I suppose, that our participation in social media has really increased since then. And so our awareness of the impending doom and the kind of dealing with apocalypse, it seems to have only increased since then. One of the reasons I think that I was so interested in the Course of Empire series of paintings is that it contextualizes all of this as a cycle. And I think to calm myself down every once in a while, I do remind myself that historically, you know, there's always apocalyptic thinking in every period of time. And so, you know, every generation has its own version of the apocalypse. You know, I grew up as a very early child, you know, basically thinking about nuclear war and climbing under desks to protect yourself. So,
right,
version of that.
And when you know, many of the things we're talking about, the animations, these are all projected, and you're referring to them often as paintings, which you could say is how they appear. Are you using that term interchangeably, or what do you think of when you're making these digital paintings? They're being projected, animated. Do you use those terms interchangeably, or how?
I think they are moving images. But rather than framing them, you know, as film, I've always thought of them more as spatial. And so they tend to be, I tend to think of them as moving paintings because they, for a long time, I wasn't thinking that I was much of a storyteller. I was thinking that I was a person who made these interesting spaces. As time and as the cycle got longer, And I added to it, they often tend to become more narrative, and they did start to refer not only to paintings and fine art references, but then they started to kind of bring in references from animation, from Disney and from Miyazaki and from all of these other animated references. And so it's a kind of, in a way, for me, a kind of collision of my own experience of frame of references, really, from everything from childhood cartoons through painting and fine art. But you're right; I've always thought of them in terms of painting. One of the weirdest, most interesting things that's happening to me right now is that some of these pieces are finding their way into the public realm. Bright Canyon was a piece that in 2014 was part of the Midnight Moment series, which happened on, you know, like 60-some screens in Times Square for 1 minute a day at 11:59 p.m. to midnight. And then The Fluid is a piece that's a kind of multi-screen piece, and that is actually up right now in the Fulton Street Station in downtown Manhattan. And so every hour, on the hour for 2 minutes, The Fluid takes over all 52 screens in the station. And that's sort of interesting because these things that I made as animations are suddenly being contextualized as public artworks also.
That's very interesting. So that brings me to the question how they are collected and displayed. They're not obviously collected or displayed in the typical way. Sometimes when shown in galleries or museums, they might be projected much larger than I would imagine the collector would have them. So let's just talk about how these get out into culture. Is it through shows or do people collect them? Is that how they also get out there, or is that not part of the practice that they be collected necessarily?
It actually is part of the practice, and I think that it's really interesting to me that there is a world of collector who's interested in collecting moving image and digital work, and I find it incredibly inspiring because these are fairly adventurous people who collect this work, but it seems to me always with the collectors that collect my work, that they're not only kind of wanting a piece of it, wanting to have it, but they're also in some ways acting as very old school patrons. I mean, they're supporting the work by purchasing it. And while, you know, they're happy to display it in their homes, they're also, I think, in a very real way, kind of contributing to my ongoing practice, which I've always kind of really, really been amazed by. But people have the work in their homes, and you know, some people show them on large monitors. Some people have very elaborate video walls. Some people project them only occasionally, you know, when they have people over, and some people live with them kind of on a daily basis. One great thing that's been happening lately are kind of commissioned works, where people have started to commission me to make these animations site-specific and for their outdoor spaces. And so they tend to get back into the landscape. And since they're often about landscape, it's kind of great that happens as well.
It is great. And those commissions are coming through the gallery, of course. Is that how that happens?
Yeah, that's pretty much how that happens. I mean, people see a work and they may be interested in it but want something a little bit more spatial, or I guess environmental in the spatial sense, rather than to just show it on a monitor. And I've always been really interested in that, in the kind of immersive aspect of these pieces. So I try, when I'm showing in a gallery, to project them fairly large so they consume you. Go ahead.
And let's talk about why you made this big move. Albeit it's temporary, right? That you move from New York to Mexico City, or no?
It is temporary. Well, there are a couple of reasons why I'm doing it. I mean, my partner is on sabbatical, and so we're looking for an idea of what to do with that sabbatical. And Mexico City came up, I think, in part because, I mean, I live in New York, and I have this perspective of what it's like to live in the city. And I'm, you know, since I'm so interested in public space and the digital aspects of public space, I thought it's really important to kind of get multiple perspectives. And so, on one level, just in general, a change of scene was really important in order to sort of shift things up and shake things up a little bit. And then I had spent time in Mexico City in the past and realized that the sort of Mexican mural tradition here, you know, Diego Rivera and Siqueiros and Orozco, is huge, and it just seems so well integrated into culture. And so I thought that as a place to begin with sort of shifting the urban perspective up a little bit, to kind of immerse myself in the public space of Mexico City would be a really great start. The fact that it's -3 in New York and 72 here is, you know, didn't hurt.
I bet. And And so what will you be working on there? You will be working on public art, or what does that mean exactly?
Well, I mean, you know, this is sort of one of the things that's happened over the past, you know, over working on this series for the past 8 years, is that I realized that I think the best work that people present in public, what's generally referred to as public art, kind of often has a bad reputation. But what I've found is I make work in the studio, and then often people are interested in it and being able to show it in public. And I think so that distinction between the studio practice and public practice is going away for me. But I do think that when you work on public stuff, it is site specific and can be site specific. But the more digital animation that I put out in the world, the more I realize that site specificity is not so important anymore. So I think what I'm working on here, as I said, I'm just the way I begin an animation. It starts with almost just phrases, with images and short images, and then I kind of gather them and construct the piece. And in particular, almost everything that I've been working on for the past, I don't know, 25 years has been dealing with ideas about aspiration and ambition, and that's taken, I've done that through multiple points of view. I think in terms of, you know, religious aspiration and the aspiration of a sort of house and the personal, gathering of stuff and all different ways. And so lately I've kind of been into this idea of masculinity and the construction industry and construction of buildings and architecture. And I suppose a little bit of the way materiality intersects with digital life. And so the new work that I'm working on in Mexico City is probably going to find its form in animation, but is going to deal with a lot of these issues of constructing, of a kind of animation that constructs itself in a way that a building is constructed. That's it.
So let's talk about building that a little bit and the context of Mexico City. So in your studio in Mexico City, the way you work is essentially the way you paint these animations, so to speak, is you're using computers and tablets, are you also projecting them to see how they look projected as you make them, or does that happen much later?
Well, I should probably tell you, I mean, while I am calling you from Mexico City, I'm at the end of week one of this 6-month experience. And so you're catching me like almost right between the sort of end of Swell and the beginning of this new piece. And so I'm still developing my own process here, my studio process. In fact, a big part of that is, you know, the wandering is kind of going out into the neighborhood, going out into the city and kind of experiencing different neighborhoods. And so I think what's going to happen is that I'm going to kind of balance my experience here by spending a lot of time out in the world and then only some part of my time, you know, working in the studio on the digital animated pieces. So I think that I'll use the 6-month period as a kind of massive collection process, and then take them back with me and start to kind of process the experience. Because so much of the reason to be here is to experience the city and kind of see how people live and how people move through the streets and how digital culture has an impact on that actual public space. And so I think it's hard to kind of, I think the goals will emerge over time, but for me right now, it's very clear that the kind of real life outdoor experience is a big part of why I'm doing this here. And so, you're catching me at the very beginning of this project.
So it may be too soon to ask this question, but how is it walking around there? You're in such a different world, such a different neighborhood,
It's pretty remarkable. I think it's incredibly different from I think people's impressions of it. I mean, it's an incredibly green and lush city. I mean, it it is a desert. I mean, you're extremely high up altitude-wise, but there's the landscape that's kind of infiltrated the urban world is so lush and so rich that people always think of it as a city that's, you know, extremely polluted, and there's a lot of people who talk about the city when you say that you're going there as a kind of place that, oh, you have to be very, very careful. But that's true of every city. I think it's the primary kind of overwhelming difference of moving throughout the city for me so far has been this experience of the sort of lush landscape completely integrated into the constructed world. At the same time, it's incredibly active. Each neighborhood, you know, has a very different character. There's a sort of historic center that's just, you know, mobbed with people. And then there are various other neighborhoods that function just like, you know, like little worlds unto themselves. It's also a city that's sort of sliced up with large, broad, modern, almost highways that run through the city. But, you know, I'm talking about it as a person who's lived here for a week so far. And so I feel like I have a lot to learn, and the kind of that wandering process is so much part of the learning experience. And so I've got.
And you said there was more public art there. Are you seeing more of that? I mean, I know that it has a history when you think of Diego Rivera and others, but do you see that now when you walk around the city, more public art?
I think that there's a tremendous amount of public art here, and I talked about the mural tradition primarily because I feel like that's the moment where people really brought the work that they did and the artwork they did into the public realm, and it was an incredibly it was sort of suffused with politics in this really interesting way, and so the universities, the National Palace, like there is a great embrace of public art in a way that I think is incredibly moving and refreshing for someone coming from America, because I think that they're extremely proud of this work. And I think, you know, I having a perspective and a little bit of distance on it, this sort of the attitude toward art in general, and the fact that it isn't a struggle to necessarily get it put out into the world, that there's a great support for it because it's part of the culture. And I'm thinking a lot about how we in America might find a way to look at work in the public realm that can be really integrated into culture, and not always seen as this kind of outsider, aggressive, alien thing that we don't understand. So that's just
I like that. Certainly I'd like to see that as well. It seems more like a visual, not visual literacy, but something where it's really part of our culture, which makes me want to just ask the question, which makes us kind of jump back a little bit, but
sure.
It would be nice, that there were more artists like you involved in the public realm. I mean, there certainly are, but let's say more. So, you know, going off of that and how perhaps things should change here as well as other places, how did things first start for you? You've had quite a career with multiple galleries and showing all over the world and a lot of festivals in all kinds of places. Your medium would seem to be difficult initially to do that. So what I'm asking is, for you to get into the world, was it the initial galleries that you got into that did that, or are you reaching out into the world as an artist in the public realm on your own terms? I'm kind of asking how you navigated all that and how all that began blossoming for you.
I'll tell you, I was really interested in putting work out kind of unmediated by the gallery at the very beginning of my career. And one of the things that happened at that time was that Richard Serra had made Tilted Arc, and he put it, you know, in the plaza in front of the Jacob Javits Federal Building downtown. And that kind of was a huge moment in my life, because I thought I sort of understood putting Tilted Arc into the world in a way there was a sociologist, I think, that talked about how the experience of going to work in the Jacob Javits building was awful, and putting Tilt the Dark in front of it just made it more awful. And this was really interesting for me because I thought that Sarah was just an unbelievably great artist. And the experience of putting up Tilt the Dark in front of that building made it so, it sort of called attention to the misery of maybe what people were doing by going to work there every day through adding more misery to it. And so I had this idea to do a public piece that was part of Public Art Funds in the Public Realm project way back in 1996 that was a little bit of a riff on the Richard Serra Tilt the Dark thing. And so I made a piece called Commutable, which was I gilded the staircase to the Williamsburg Bridge bike path back when it had a staircase. And, you know, there were a lot of kind of notions involved in that, but the basic principle was that, you know, there was this idea that when immigrants want to come to America, they imagine the streets paved with gold, and the Lower East Side was an immigrant neighborhood, and yet there are no great gilded monuments in the Lower East Side. And so I thought I would make a monument about going to work that was a kind of related to this idea of commuting the way Sarah's Tilt the Dark was related to commuting. But then I sort of developed my own approach at that point that was, I kind of think of it as a little bit more like a Trojan horse approach, where there's something that is that's kind of has an element of delight, or maybe a little bit of decadence or beauty, and that it's that draws you in, and then when you kind of unpack it, the critique starts to emerge. And so I think that piece, Commutable, sort of developed for me my general approach to what I wanted to do in the public realm at the very beginning. And I think since then I've kind of continued to work on these ideas of ambition and aspiration, but maybe a little bit more now in terms of the cost of those things, like what ends up being the cost of it. So I continued, I guess, to make public work while making work that eventually was shown in galleries as well. And I kind of love the idea of, you know, that it's the same work, but it just kind of flows through. It's either presented in a gallery context, or it's presented in out in the world, and that there's less of a distinction between those two things. I don't know if that answers your question, but
No, it does. It explains how it got into the world, and then the next steps for you in New York, I guess, was when you got represented by a gallery that things began growing, you know, in that respect. And it was because you're traveling a lot, and you're around the world, and you're in different fairs. So what I was also asking is part of that your own motivation and outreach, that all of that is happening, that you're moving around so much, or did the gallery in a sense help all that to happen?
I think, you know, in the kind of art world today, I can't help thinking that the gallery is something that we have to think of as a little bit more like as supplemental, and less as the old school, oh, the gallery is going to be, you know, the great advocate. I mean, I work with a great gallery right now in San Francisco that's Catherine Clark Gallery, which is really wonderful in terms of getting work out there. And going to fairs and stuff. But I've always feel like the artist has to take responsibility for their own career as well. I think, you know, I think young artists understand themselves as part entrepreneur and part artist in a way that maybe we never did. But I do think that I work project to project often. I think that I let the project drive what form it's going to take and where it's going to happen. But I never want to rely on a gallery to make things happen. I often think people who commission work sometimes see work in a gallery and can contact the gallery, but sometimes people contact me directly, and those commissions, you know, happen outside the gallery. So I feel like it's, you know, it's like a stool with a couple of legs, and you've got to be able to hold it up. And I think the gallery world and the way the gallery system and the art world works, that's only one of the legs of that stool. I think it's important to kind of develop your projects and put them out in the world on your own as well.
Mm. I agree. I'm glad you said that. And Well, I wish you luck in Mexico City. That sounds exciting, really, just the beginning of it, I know. Before we go, I want to ask you what you're reading now, if you are reading something at the moment.
I tend to read fiction. I read some nonfiction, but so we're inundated with that through news and social media. So I've been reading a lot of fiction lately. Since I've come here, I've just started a new book. There's a fiction writer named Rachel Cusk, and she has a trilogy. The first book is called Outline, which is where I am right now. The second book is Transit, and the third one, I guess, is Kudos. And so I'm reading Outline. It's interesting to me because she deals with very personal stories, but it's really clear from the way she writes that the way we behave with each other on a kind of individual level mirrors, I think, a larger kind of cultural behavior, which is interesting to me. And then I'm also listening to books like so many people, and it's sort of a different project. And some of the books that I'm listening to are books that I've read a long time ago. So right now, along those same lines, I'm listening to Persuasion, which is a Jane Austen book, because I'm kind of interested in this idea of persuasion, of the idea that how much goes on in the world right now that we're trying to kind of clobber each other over our heads about trying to kind of convince people of a point of view. And so I'm kind of starting to think about this sort of subtlety of this art of persuasion and drawing people into your corner in a way that is more subtle and less embattled, I guess.
I like that. Chris, I want to thank you for talking to me today and also wish you the best with your new project and adventure. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It was great to talk to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.